This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hi, I'm Helen Farmer. Great to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Pets and vets, this week we were speaking to Dr. Katrin Yarn. What do you need to be aware of when it comes to your breed and those health concerns? We're also addressing that viral trend of posting photos of your pet in order to plant a tree. What is the truth behind it? And of course, it was all about getting your questions answered, from nocturnal hamsters to licky pugs.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the trusted expert in nutrition for your cat and dog.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. It is time for one of my favourite hours on the radio. It's all about your animals. Today's vet joining us to share her expertise and answer your questions is Dr. Katrin Yarn, the founder of the German Veterinary Clinic. As we look behind the latest pet news and, most importantly, put your minds at ease, or in fact tell you what to do when it comes to any conditions, behaviours, or just some symptoms that aren't adding up. Dr. Katrin, how are you?
Very good, Helen. Lovely to speak to you.
I wish you were here. It's so lovely. We're here at Dubai Design District and the atmosphere is fantastic. You're, of course, in the nation's capital, but through the power of technology, having a chat about all things animal. Now, Dr. Katrin, a trend emerged earlier this week on Instagram. Lots of people sharing on their stories, more so than usual, photos of their pet. And there was a sticker that was saying, you know, you post a pic, we plant a tree. Did you see this?
I did, actually. Yeah, I did.
Well, it's not all it seems, because everyone's Instagram was inundated with this saying, we'll plant one tree for every pet picture. Within a few days, this sticker had been shared more than 4 million times. And, well, the questions started going, who's going to plant these trees? Where are these trees going to be? It was started by a company called Plant a Tree Co., who posted this story to their followers. And it caught on faster than they thought. They then kind of deleted it, realized it was going to grow too big and they didn't have the resource to plant that many trees. So if you have shared it, unfortunately there will not be a tree guaranteed. They're actually looking to do a bit of a fundraiser. They can follow through, but no promises as yet. In total honesty, anything that encourages people to share photos of their pets, I am on board. So just do it anyway. Dr. Katrin, we've got many questions coming in. I just wondered what's coming to clinic right now. What's any kind of patterns or anything that's giving people, you know, cause for concern right now?
I think obviously with the festive season starting, lots of fireworks, beers, or pet owners looking for advice on what to do during festivities and fireworks in particular. So that's something that we're dealing a lot with at the moment. That's the classic time of year for it, unfortunately. So
any advice you could share here if people's pets do get distressed by these noises and lights in some cases?
There's quite a lot that we can do. I think planning ahead, making sure that we've walked our doggies and cats are inside well before any sort of fireworks start, playing music, calming music, reassuring your pets, perhaps giving them a food puzzle toy or something to keep them busy. Thunder shirts are a good thing. And then obviously if the pet has a true phobia of noises such as fireworks, it'd be good to seek a behaviourist to get perhaps some behaviour medication or supplements to help them through those really scary periods.
If you do have any questions for Dr. Katrin Yarn, get in touch. 4001 is the SMS. You can use your ARN Player app. And don't forget, you'll automatically go into the draw to win a goodie bag from Royal Canin. There's lots of news to discuss, including vets urging dog owners to find out their pets' health risks related to their breed. Many people getting in touch. And as I said earlier, you are a real expert when it comes to behaviours of animals, as well, of course, as their health. A few wailing cats messages saying, my cat wails, like howls, for no obvious reason and very loudly. It's at all times of the day, dawn, evening, late. I'd love to know what she's trying to communicate. She also gnaws the corners of pillows. She's altogether quite strange. What comes to mind there?
Oh, I see quite a lot of these cases, actually. I mean, it depends a little bit on how old the cat is and what type of cat is, whether it's an indoor, outdoor, or indoor only. But oftentimes, vocalizations like that can be frustration, the cat not getting access, perhaps something that it would like to get access to, such as the great outdoors. or perhaps not having enough to occupy them throughout the day. So it's always a little bit case-by-case dependent. There are a number of things that come to mind, but yeah, that would be something that I would think of initially.
Okay.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the trusted expert in nutrition for your cat and dog.
In conversation this afternoon with Dr. Katrin Yarn from the German Veterinary Clinic. Lots of behavioural questions coming in for you, Dr. Katrin. And we heard earlier from Dorette, who's got a pug called Max, who's always licking everything. Couches, pillows, duvets, blankets. Is this normal? What can I do to make him stop? Can you help Dorette and licky pug Max?
Licky pug Max. Yeah, it's a great question. So number one, no, it's not normal, I would say. That sounds like it's an excessive type behaviour. So there are a few things that come to mind. Number one could be that Max has a gastrointestinal upset, that he either feels nauseous or, you know, that he has some kind of other stomach or bowel problem, and the licking helps to soothe that. So that would be the first thing. The second thing is that licking of objects can sometimes be almost a compulsive type behavior, to deal with anxiety or to deal with, you know, perhaps a less than ideal sort of environmental setup. I often see dogs actually in behavior consultations that lick objects sort of quite compulsively. So, yeah, it's really interesting. I'd be happy to advise further, yeah, with a bit more detail.
Let you know, Dorette, if there's any more details you can share on the SMS, or as I said, Dr. Katrin Yarn can be found at the German Veterinary Centre. Going to cats, Elisa says, should we stop cats from fighting between each other or let them fight it out, as some have advised? I've got 20 cats and they fight between the alpha males. I know Elisa's very involved in rescuing and fostering, hence the number. So she's feeding more and more stray cats and has had some allergic reactions as well. So a follow-up question there about, can you actually develop allergies to cats later in life? So let's start with the cat fighting. Should you just let them get on with it? Should you intervene?
Yeah, so it's never a good idea to just let them get on with it. Cat fights can potentially become really aggressive and cause severe injuries. And the other reason I wouldn't recommend letting them fight it out is because it damages the relationship between those cats, and it is then less likely for those cats to be able to reconcile with each other. So yeah, it's not really a case of them fighting it out is going to kind of sort out the situation. It's more likely that fights will precipitate more fights.
Okay, that does make sense. And what about her question saying, can you be allergic to cats and dogs even if you've got negative test results? So Elisa's saying, since she's been feeding more and more, she's had some severe allergic reactions. How can you deal with possible allergies when you don't want to give up your pets?
So I'm unfortunately not a human doctor, so it's difficult for me to answer that question. I presume it's possible to develop allergies in later life, but I guess you'd need to speak to a dermatologist or allergy specialist from the human side to help with that. Not really a question that I'm qualified to answer, I'm afraid.
Elisa, next time we have an allergy specialist, I will put this question to them. a question here from John saying, my cat always meows almost every night wanting to go outside. So at 2 a.m. will meow loudly. It's already keeping me awake. One time I opened the door and love, Jeff kept on running in the corridor. Don't know what to do. She's very active. Any tips? 2 a.m. Oh, my days. That would not be my favourite animal. So what can we do to stop this?
So I didn't really understand in the question there, do they let the cat then go out at 2 a.m. or not?
I think, yeah, they basically want to go out. So they're opening the door and then they're running straight out.
Yeah. So I think, you know, an easy solution for that would be a cat flap or another way that the cat can safely access the outdoors when they want to. It's likely that is a favorite time for them to be outdoors, you know, hunting things. Cats are, they're crepuscular, which means dusk and dawn active, but they also go and hunt at night. So that would be the simplest solution to kind of save everybody's sleep, would be to grant free access in a safe way.
But what if you're in an apartment?
Yeah, I mean, that of course is difficult, and that can be quite a challenging situation to resolve, because again, it's that frustration that I spoke about. So the cat looking to access the outdoors isn't able to. And then the vocalization comes as a result of being frustrated and not being able to have that need met. So it's not an easy one to solve, that one.
What about tiring them out a bit more during the day? Is that worth a try?
You could. I mean, you could offer, I mean, you should anyway offer lots of opportunities for play and predatory behaviour, so lots of different types of hunting toys and that kind of thing, but it won't necessarily solve the problem if the cat really wants access to the outdoors in the night.
Okay, Dr. Katrin Yarn with us this afternoon.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the animal before the owner.
Joining us to talk pets is vet Dr. Katrin Yarn, speaking to us from the Gym and Veterinary Clinic. Dr. Katrin, there's been news out of the UK, basically vets urging dog owners to research the breeds that they're interested in, because to find out if they've got a high risk of health issues. Can you explain a little bit about some of the more common associations between certain breeds and certain conditions that you see coming into clinic?
Yeah, of course. So there are a few sort of hereditary problems in some breeds. A few that would immediately spring to mind are German Shepherds. They are predisposed to getting hip dysplasia, which is a really painful degenerative joint disease of the hips. They were bred to have this sort of a certain look whereby their hips slant downward slightly, but that in turn has led to these sort of health problems. So that's one. Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, for example, they tend to get heart conditions more than other breeds, perhaps. That was something I saw a lot in practice in the UK. Large dogs in general, we have to be really careful with joint problems. Elbow dysplasia, just as hip dysplasia, are pretty common. And then, of course, all of the sort of flat-nosed breeds, the brachycephalics, as we call them, the French bulldogs and the other bulldogs, they are all predisposed to having trouble breathing. Those are potentially some of the more common ones. We have a few breeds that can have, slightly more unusual things, such as neurological problems or brain problems. That's certainly something. But I think also from a behavioral point of view, it's really important to research what your breed of dog was initially bred to do. So that from an occupational point of view, you know, if you decide to go for a border collie, well, they were bred to herd sheep. So they are going to have perhaps behavioral differences than
a lot of energy.
Yeah, a lot of energy, exactly. And maybe a retriever who's been bred to put things in their mouth. So there's lots of things to think about when you think about a certain breed and what type of breed would be suitable to your family.
I really hope that helps anyone out there who is considering getting an animal, but do your research. And as we always say, you know, vets and veterinary nurses are always really happy to talk through different options, because the last thing anyone wants is for you to commit to an animal that you're not able to look after, whether that was financially or practically. So please do research. We've got hamsters, we've got puppies, we've got cats. Let's go to Linda. Linda's been in touch about a 2-year-old terrier called Bobby, saying Bobby's really standoffish about food. You can take it or leave it. When we put down food, even if we know he's hungry, he will act as if he doesn't want it. He'll look away, walk away, and then return by skulking around the edges of the room back the bowl. It's almost like he's showing he doesn't really want it. This morning I was putting his food out and he could see me do it. He went across the room and stood behind a plant. It was like he was in an amateur dramatics production. We find it funny, but I'm curious what could be behind it. Thank you. That's from Linda. I love this vision of Bobby like pretending to be disinterested, just hiding behind a plant and then poking out when she's not looking. What's all this about? Does anything spring to mind?
Yeah, I see this actually quite a lot in behaviour practice. Dogs either having poor appetites or not necessarily wanting to eat. And I always say to my clients, dogs like eating. You know, that dogs like to eat normally. So when they don't, or they behave strangely around food, that's definitely an alarm sign for me. Mm-hmm. And again, it could either be physical or it could be behavioral. So again, from the physical side of things, you know, if there's a gastrointestinal problem there, if the dog feels nauseous whenever they eat, they may still want to eat, but the thought of, you know, potentially then feeling nauseous after having eaten might be something that might prevent them from eating. And then on the behavioral side of things, there could be so many reasons. You know, it could be the type of food, the way it's presented, the bowl that it's presented in. It could be that the dog perhaps had an unpleasant experience when they were eating, so that now they're a little bit kind of distrustful of what might happen when they do eat. So it's a big topic. It's a pretty complex topic, but certainly something worth investigating, because I don't think it's normal for a dog not to want to eat. Dogs enjoy eating.
Okay, really hope that helps, Linda. Let us know if there's any other red flags in little Bobby, or if it's worth a trip to the vets. Gerald wants to know about hamsters, saying, my Syrian hamster comes out in the day for a drink or food or treats, but most Syrian hamsters seem to be nocturnal. I've read that dwarf hamsters are more adaptable to the sleep schedules of humans. Any ideas? What do you know about the sleep patterns of a hamster, Dr. Katrin?
Yeah, so the hamsters are most definitely nocturnal. Hamsters are really actually quite interesting animals. They're quite different to a lot of our other animals. Syrian hamsters in particular, they're very much a solitary species, so they don't get on well with other hamsters, but they are most definitely nocturnal. So whilst they may occasionally kind of pop out during the day, and sometimes that can be to sort of coincide with human schedules of when food might be given and that sort of thing, they're normally active at night and they normally sleep all day, which is why they don't make fantastic children's pets, because obviously children want to interact with them during the day, which is when the hamsters want to sleep. So, yeah.
Good to know. Hope that helps, Gerald. A question here, and it sounds like a frustrated Cassie who's been in touch on 4001 saying, my kitten Rupert, great name, 3 months old and chewing everything. I've never known anything like it. I've had this with puppies, but never cats. He's adorable, so lovely. But if anything, this crazy dog-like side makes us love him more. But he's chewing everything. Plants, kids' toys, the binder on my notepads, and I'm worried for his health. Can I assume this is teething? Is there some kind of toy that he can enjoy chewing that gets his needs met? She says he also eats way more than the box recommends. Any insights there, Dr. Katrin?
I actually love this question because I completely feel your pain. I have a kitten at the moment and she is the same. If she's not chewing on my toes, then she's trying to chew on my trouser strings or, you know, plants in the morning. So I think part of it is normal explorative kitten behavior. Part of it, yes, could also be teething, although probably at 3 months, a little bit young for that. In terms of quantities of food, so kittens do go through growth spurts, and it's possible that at some point they might be hungrier than at others, but it's also really worthwhile checking out worms and intestinal parasites and that sort of thing if they're really, really hungry. In terms of giving them something appropriate to chew on, we actually sometimes recommend dog chew toys for cats that are particularly chewy and, you know, and like to chew on things, and they're a great range of sort of edible dog chews, if you like, that cats can also go for and that will keep them occupied. But I feel your pain. I have the same going on at my house at the moment.
It's reassuring that even you, a vet and a behavioural expert, still has the same problems as the rest of us. Right, last question. One that's come in from Vinayak on 4001 saying, is it all right to feed my puppy fresh fruits like blueberries and strawberries and other items like peanut butter in small quantities? What do the guidelines and the kind of general medical recommendations say?
So I would say in small quantities, absolutely. They may actually, in fact, add a little bit of variety and interest, but I wouldn't use those as a replacement for the puppy's diet, but really use them as sort of novel items, things that might taste different or have different textures. Mm-hmm. Peanut butter is absolutely fine. I would probably reserve peanut butter for, you know, as a really high value treat if your puppy loves it, and always be really, really careful that the peanut butter doesn't contain any xylitol as a sweetening agent, because that can be quite toxic to dogs. So always look at for natural peanut butters. But yeah, absolutely. As long as the food is safe, and you'll find lots of guides online as to what are safe foods, to add a little bit of interest, yes, go for it.
Brilliant. Dr. Katrin, thank you so much for your insights, as ever. Always comes in real time, and you always do an incredible job of helping out us and listeners. So thank you. Dr. Katrin can be found at the German Veterinary Clinic.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can tune in to Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.